Hi there, and welcome to the Cory Doctorow podcast. I'm Cory Doctorow, and today I'm reading to you from my novel Eastern Standard Tribe, published in 2003 by Tor Books. Lots of great stuff happening, but before I tell you about any of it, I've been reading this great series of Japanese comic books, or manga, as the kids say, Death Note. I wrote about the first one on Boing Boing just in the new year and mentioned that I'd had a great time reading it, but I'm now like 7 volumes into the series, and man, it's a real nail-biter of a comic book. It's this cheerfully immoral Japanese story about a kid who's a straight-A student who is visited by a death god who gives him a notebook. If he writes any name into the notebook, that person drops dead, and he decides to become a vigilante, and he's hunted by this super cop, and it sounds kind of goofy and melodramatic, but boy, it's a really good set of stories, interlocking stories over now 8 volumes with several more planned. They're like popcorn. I just can't stop reading them. So, lots of great news with Overclocked, my new short story collection. Just got back from Toronto, where I did a fun book launch at Baca, the science fiction bookstore there. Thank you to everyone who turned up. Also, lots of press and media there with the CBC and City TV and lots of others. And on the 8th of February, that's this coming Thursday, I'm going to be signing books and doing a launch at 7 p.m. at Borderlands Books with Rudy Rucker, who's one of my personal heroes. And then the following Thursday, February the 15th, I'm going to be doing a launch and signing at the Secret Headquarters here in Los Angeles. That is absolutely the coolest name for a comic book store ever. A few more details about the Vancouver launch. It's going to be March 8th and 9th on the Simon Fraser University campuses. And there's going to be something at one of the local bookstores as well. And I'm doing a phone-in podcast. I'm not really sure exactly how that works on February the 12th. All the details are up at craphound.com if you just pop in there. And the other good bit of news here is there's been a new pressing of Overclocked scheduled. The My Short Story Collection has sold out its entire initial print run in just a few weeks. Now, the print run was fairly modest, but short story collections, no one expects them to sell much. They're kind of prestige slash vanity projects for literary presses, and it's pretty amazing to think that the quite generous run, which was twice the run of my last short story collection's first run, has just sold out in a matter of weeks. Very flattering, and I'm very grateful for it. Thank you very much, all of you, for buying and reading this book. I really appreciate it. Thanks. So with that, I'll cut back to Eastern Standard Tribe and read you a chapter or two. Chapter 11. Art and Linda in Linda's minuscule joke of a flat. She's 2 months into a 6-month house swap with some friends of friends who have a 4th-story walk-up in Kensington with a partial, i.e. fictional, view of the park. The lights are on timers, and you need to race them to her flat's door, otherwise there's no way you'll fit the archaic key into the battered keyhole. The windows in the stairwell are so grimed as to provide more of a suggestion of light than light itself. Art's ass aches, and he paces the flat's 3 wee rooms and drinks hormone-enhanced high-energy liquid breakfast from the half-fridge in the efficiency kitchen. Linda's taken dibs on the first shower, which is fine by Art, who can't get the hang of the goddamned English plumbing, which delivers an energy-efficient eat-your-vegetables-and-save-the-planet trickle of scalding water. Art has switched off his calm, his frazzled nerves no longer capable of coping with its perennial and demanding beeping and buzzing. This is very, very nearly unthinkable, but necessary, he rationalizes, given the extraordinary events of the past 24 hours. And Fede can go fuck himself, for that matter, that paranoid asshole, and he can fuck the clients in New Jersey and the whole of Virgin Deutsche Telekom while he's at it. The energy bev is kicking in and making his heart race and his pulse throb in his throat, and he's so unbearably hyperkinetic that he turns the coffee table on its end in the galley kitchen and clears a space in the living room that's barely big enough to spin around in and starts to work through a slow, slow set of Tai Chi, so slow that he barely moves at all, except that he can feel the moving, can feel the muscles every flex and groan as they wind up release, move and swing and slide. Single whip slides into crane, opens wings, and he needs to crouch down low, lower than his woolen slacks will let him. They're grimy and gross anyway, so he undoes his belt and kicks them off. Down low as white crane opens wings and brush knee, punch, apparent closure, then low again, creakingly, achingly low into wave hands like clouds, until his spine and his coccyx crackle and give, springing open, fascia open, ribs open, smooth breath rising and falling with his diaphragm, smooth mind, smooth and sweat cool in the mat of his hair. He moves through the set and does not notice Linda until he unwinds into a slow, ponderous lotus kick, closes again, breathes a moment, and looks around slowly, grinning like a holy fool. She's in a tartan housecoat, with a threadbare towel wrapped around her hair, water beating on her bony ankles and long, skinny feet. Art! God damn, Art! What the hell was that? Tai Chi, he says, drawing a deep breath in through his nostrils, feeling each rib expand and turn, exhaling through his mouth. I do it to unwind. It was beautiful, Art. Art, Art, I mean, wow, inspiring, something. You're gonna show me how to do that, Art, right? You're gonna... I could try, Art says. I'm not really qualified to teach it. I stopped going to class 10 years ago. Shut up, Art. You can teach that. Damn, you can teach that. I know you can. That was... Wow! She rushes forwards and takes his hands. She squeezes and looks into his eyes. She squeezes again and tugs his hands towards her hips, reeling his chest towards her breast, tilting up her chin up, and angling that long jawline that's so long as to be almost horsey, but it isn't. It's strong and clean. Art smells shampoo and sandalwood talc, and his skin puckers into a crinkle that's so sudden and massive it's almost audible. They've been together continuously for the past 5 days, almost without interruption, and he's already conditioned to her smell and her body language and the subtle signals of her face's many mobile bits and pieces. She is a fire. He is a fire. Their bodies are talking to each other in some secret language of shifting centers of gravity and unconscious pheromones, and his face tilts down towards her, slowly with all the time in the world, lowers and lowers, weak old whiskers actually tickling the top of her nose, her lips parting now, and her breath moistens them, beads them with liquid condensed out of her vapor. His top lip touches her bottom lip. He could leave it at that and be happy. The touch is so satisfying, and he is contented there for a long moment, then moves to engage his lower lip, moving, tilting. His comm rings. His comm, which he has switched off, rings. Shit. Hello, he says, he shouts. Arthur? Says a voice that is old and hurt and melancholy. His gran's voice. His gran, who can override his ringer, switch on his comm at a distance, because Art is a good grandson who is raised almost entirely by his saintly and frail and depressive and melodramatic and obsessive grandmother, and of course his comm is set to pass her calls, not because he is a suck, but because he is loyal and sensitive, and he loves his gran. Gran, hi. Sorry, I was just in the middle of something. Sorry. He checks his comm, which tells him that it's only 6 in the morning in Toronto, noon in London, and that the date is April 8th, and today is the day that he should have known his grandmother would call. You forgot, she says, no accusation, just a weary and disappointed sadness. He has indeed forgotten. No, Gran, I didn't forget, but he did. It is the 8th of April, 2022, which means that it is 21 years to the day since his mother died, and he has forgotten. It's all right, you're busy, I understand. Tell me, Art, how are you? When will you visit Toronto? I'm fine, Gran, I'm sorry I haven't called, I've been sick. Shit, wrong lie. You're sick? What's wrong? It's nothing, I put my back out, working too hard, stress, it's nothing, Gran. He chances to look up at Linda, who is standing where he left her, when he dived reflexively for his comm, staring disbelievingly at him. Her robe is open to her navel, and he sees 3 curls of pubic hair above the knot in its belt that curl towards her groin, sees the hourglass made by the edges of her breast that are visible in the V of the robe, sees the edge of one aureole, the left one. He is in a t-shirt and bare feet and boxers, crouching over his trousers, talking to his gran, and he locks eyes with Linda and shakes his head apologetically, then settles to sit down cross-legged, hunched over an erection he didn't know he had, resolves to look at her while he talks. Stress, always stress. You should take some vacation time. Are you seeing someone, a chiropractor? He's entangled in the lie. Yes, I have an appointment tomorrow. How will you get there? Don't take the subway. Take a taxi. And give me the doctor's name. I'll look him up. I'll take a cab. It'll be fine. He's the only one my travel insurance covers. The only one? Art, what kind of insurance do you have? I'll call them. I'll find you a chiropractor. Betty Melville, she has family in London. They'll know someone. God. Gran, it's fine. How are you? A sigh. How am I? On this day, how am I? How is your health? Are you keeping busy? My health is fine. I keep busy. Father Ferlinghetti came to dinner last night at the house. I made a nice roast, and I'll have sandwiches today. That's good. I'm thinking of your mother, you know. I know. Do you think of her, Art? You were so young when she went, but you remember her, don't you?
I do, Gran.
He remembers her, albeit dimly. He was barely 9 when she died.
Of course you remember your mother. It's a terrible thing for a mother to live longer than her daughter.
His Gran says this every year. Art still hasn't figured out how to respond to it. Time for another stab at it.
I'm glad you're still here, Gran.
Wrong thing. Gran is sobbing now. Art drops his eyes from Linda's and looks at the crazy weft and woof of the faded old oriental rug.
Oh, Gran, he says, I'm sorry. In truth, Art has mourned and buried his mother. He was raised just fine by his Gran, and when he remembers his mother, he is more sad about not being sad than sad about her.
I'm an old lady, you know that. You'll remember me when I go, won't you, Art?
This, too, is a ritual question that Art can't answer well enough, no matter how he practices.
Of course, Gran, but you'll be around for a good while yet.
When are you coming back to Toronto?
He's ducked the question before, but Gran's a master of circling back and upping the ante.
Now that we've established my imminent demise...
As soon as I can, Gran. Maybe when I finish this contract. September, maybe.
You'll stay here?
I can take the sofa.
When do you think you'll arrive?
My friends all want to see you again. You remember Mrs. Tompkins? You used to play with her daughter Alice. Alice is single, you know. She has a good job, too. Working in an insurance company. Maybe she can get you a better health plan.
I don't know, Gran. I'll try to come back after I finish my contract. But I can't tell what'll be happening then. I'll let you know, okay?
Oh, Art, please come back soon. I miss you. I'm going to visit your mother's grave today and put some flowers on it. They keep it very nice at Mount Pleasant, and the trees are just blooming now.
I'll come back as soon as I can, Gran. I love you.
I love you too, Arthur.
Bye, Gran.
I'll call you once I speak to Betty about the chiropractor, all right?
All right, Gran.
He is going to have to go to the chiropractor now, even though his back feels as good as it has in years. His Gran will be checking up on it.
Bye, Arthur. I love you.
Bye, Gran.
Bye.
He shakes his head and holsters the comb back in his pants, then rolls back and lies down on the rug, facing the ceiling, eyes closed. A moment later, the hem of Linda's robe brushes his arm and she lies down next to him, takes his hand.
Everything okay?
It's just my Gran. And he tells her about this date's significance.
How did she die?
It was stupid. She slipped in the tub and cracked her skull on the tap. I was off at a friend's place for the weekend, and no one found her for 2 days. She lived for a week on life support, and they pulled the plug. No brain activity. They wouldn't let me into the hospital room after the first day. My Gran practically moved in, though. She raised me after that. I think that if she hadn't taken care of me, she would have just given up, you know. She's pretty alone back home.
What about your dad?
You knew, there used to be a big mystery about that. Gran and Mom, they were always tragic and secretive when I asked them about him. I had lots of stories to explain his absence. Ran off with another woman, thrown in jail for running guns, murdered in a bar fight. I used to be a bit of a celeb at school. Lots of kids didn't have dads around, but they all knew where their fathers were. We could always kill an afternoon making up his who and where and why. Even the teachers got into it, getting all apologetic when we had to do a genealogy project. I found out the truth, finally, when I was 19. Just looked it up online. It never occurred to me that my mom would be that secretive about something that was easy to find out, so I never bothered to try.
So what happened to him?
Oh, you know, he and Mom split up when I was a kid. He moved back in with his folks in a little town in the Thousand Islands, near Ottawa. 4 or 5 years later, he got a job planting trees for a summer up north, and he drowned swimming in a lake during a party. By the time I found out about him, his folks were dead, too.
Did you tell your friends about him, once you found out?
Oh, by then I'd lost touch with most of them. After elementary school, we moved across town, to a condo my grandmother retired to on the lake shore, out in the suburbs. In high school, I didn't really chum around much, so there wasn't anyone to talk to. I did tell my Gran, though, asked her why it was such a big secret, and she said it wasn't. She said she told me years before, but she hadn't. I think she and Mom just decided to wait until I was older before telling me, and then after my mom died, she just forgot that she hadn't told me. We got into a big fight over that.
It's a weird story, dude.
So, do you think of yourself as an orphan?
Art rolls over on his side, face inches from hers, and snorts a laugh.
God, that's so Dickensian. No one ever asked me that before.
I don't think so. You can't really be an adult and be an orphan. You're just someone with dead parents.
And I didn't find out about my dad until I was older, so I always figured he was alive and well somewhere.
What about your folks? Linda rolls over on her side, too, her robe slipping off her lower breast. Art is aroused by it, but not crazily so. Somewhere in telling his story, he's figured out that sex is a foregone conclusion, and now they're just getting through some nice foreplay. He smiles down at her nipple, which is brown as a bar of Belgian chocolate, aureole the size of a round of individual cheese, and the nipple itself a surprisingly chunky square of crinkled flesh. She follows his eyes and smiles at him, then puts his hand over her breast, covers it with hers. I told you about my mom, right? Wanted to act? Who doesn't? But she was too conscious of the cliché to mope about it. She got some little parts, nothing fab, then went on to work at a Sony dealership. 10 years later, she bought a franchise. Dad and second wife run a retreat in West Hollywood for sexually dysfunctional couples. No sibs, happy childhood, happy adolescence. Largely unsatisfying adulthood, to date. Wow, you sound like you've practiced that. She tweaks his nose, then drapes her arm across his chest. Got me. Always writing my autobiography in my head. Gotta have a snappy opener when I'm cornered by the stalkerazzi. He laces his fingers in hers, moves close enough to smell her toothpaste sweet breath. Tell me something unrehearsed about growing up. It's a stupid request. Her tone is snappish, and her fingers stiffen in his. Why? It just is. Don't try to get under my skin, okay? My childhood was fine. Look, I don't want to piss you off. I'm just trying to get to know you because, you know, I like you. A lot. And I try to get to know the people I like. She smiles her lopsided dimple. Sorry, I just don't like people who try to mess with my head. My problem, not yours. Okay. Something unrehearsed. She closes her eyes and treats him to the smooth pinkness of her eyelids and keeps them closed as she speaks. I once stole a Vedic Series 7 off my mom's lot when I was 15. It had all the girly safety features, including a tracker and a panic button, and I didn't think Mom would miss it. I just wanted to take it out for a drive. It's L.A., right? No wheels, no life. So I get as far as Venice Beach, and I'm cruising the boardwalk. This was just after it went topless, so I was swinging in the breeze, and suddenly the engine dies right in the middle of this clump of out-of-towners, frat kids from Kansas or something. Mom had called in a dealer override, and Sony shut down the engine by radio. Wow, what did you do? Well, I put my shirt back on. Then I pop the hood and poke randomly at the engine, pulling out the user serviceables and reseating them. The thing was newer than new, right? How could it be broken already? The frat boys all gathered around and gave me advice, and I played up all bitchy, you know. I've been fixing these things since I was 10. Get lost. Whatever. They loved it. I was all spunky. A couple of them were pretty cute even, and the attention was great. I felt safe. Lots of people hanging around. They weren't going to try anything funny. Only, I was starting to freak out about the car. It was really dead. I'd reseated everything, self-tested every component, double-checked the fuel. Nothing, nothing, nothing. I was going to have to call a tow, and my mom was going to kill me. So I'm trying not to let it get to me, trying to keep it all cool, but I'm not doing a great job. The frat guys are all standing too close, and they smell like beer, and I'm trying not to be perky anymore. I just want them to stay away, but they won't back off. I'm trying not to cry. And then the cops showed up. Not real cops, but Sony's vehicle recovery squad, all dressed up in Vio girl gear, stylish as a Pepsi ad, packing lots of semi-lethals and silvery aerosol shut up and be still juice, ready to nab the bad, bad perp who boosted this lovely, lovely Vedic Series 7 from Mom's lot. Part of the franchise package, that kind of response. It took me a second to figure it out. Mom didn't know it was me who had the car, so she called in a theft and bam, I was about to get arrested. The frat rats tried to run away, which is a bad idea. You don't ever run from cops. Stupid, stupid, stupid. They ended up rolling on the ground, screaming and trying to pull their faces off. It took, like, a second. I threw my hands in the air. Don't shoot! They gassed me anyway. So then I was rolling around on the ground, feeling like my sinuses were trying to explode out of my face, feeling like my eyeballs were melting, feeling like my lungs were all shriveled up into raisins. I couldn't scream, I couldn't even breathe. By the time I could even roll over and open my eyes, they had me cuffed, ankles and wrists in zap straps that were so tight they felt like piano wire. I was a cool 15-year-old, but not that cool. I started up the waterworks, boo-hoo-hoo, couldn't shut it down, couldn't even get angry, I just wanted to die. The Sony cops had seen it all before, so they put a tarp down on the Vedic's backseat upholstery, threw me in it, then rolled it into their recovery truck and drove me to the police station. I puked on the tarp twice before they got me there, almost did it a third time on the way to booking. It got up my sinuses and down my throat, too. I couldn't stop gagging, couldn't stop crying, but by now I was getting pissed. I'd been raised on that whole Sony message, a car for the rest of us, gone with Mom to their empowerment seminars, wore the little t-shirts and the temporary tats and chatted up the tire kickers about the Sony family when Mom was busy. This wasn't the Sony family I knew. I was tied up on the floor beside the desk sergeant's counter, and a Sony cop was filling in my paperwork, so I spat out the crud from my mouth, stopped sniveling, hawked back my spit, and put on my best voice. "This isn't necessary, sir," I said. "I'm not a thief. My mother owns the dealership. It was wrong to take the car, but I'm sure she didn't intend for this to happen. Certainly, I don't need to be tied up here. Please, take off the restraints. They're cutting off my circulation." The Sony cop flipped up his goofy little face mask and squinted at me, then shook his head and went back to his paperwork. "Look," I said, "look, I'm not a criminal. This is just a misunderstanding. If you check my ID and call my mother, we can work this out. Look," I read his name off his epaulettes. "Look, Officer Langtree, just let me up and we'll sort this out like adults. Come on, I don't blame you. I'm glad. You were right to take me in. This is my mom's merchandise. It's good that you went after the thief and recovered the car. But now that you know the truth, it's my mother's car, and if you just let me up, I'm sure we can work this out. Please, Officer Langtree, my wallet's in my back pocket. Just get it out and check my ID before you do this." But he went on filling in his paperwork. "Why? Why won't you just take a second to check? Why not?" He turned around and looked at me for a long time, and I was sure he was going to check, that it was all going to be fine, but then he said, "Look, I've had about as much of your bullshit as I'm going to take, little girl. Shut your hole or I'll gag you. I just want to get out of here and get back to my job, all right?" "What?" I said, and it sounded like a shriek to me. "What did you say to me? What the hell did you just say to me? Didn't you hear what I said? That's my mother's car. She owns the lot I took it off of. Do you honestly think she wants you to do this? This is the stupidest goddamn thing." "That's it," he said, and took a little silver micropore hood off his belt, the kind that you cinch up under the chin so the person inside can't talk. I started squirming away then, pleading with him, and finally I caught the desk sergeant's eyes. "He can't do this. Please, don't let him do this. I'm in a police station. Why are you letting him do this?" And the cop smiled and said, "You're absolutely right, little girl. That's enough of that." The Sony cop didn't pay any attention. He grabbed my head and stuffed it into the hood and tried to get the chin strap in place. I shook my head as best I could, and then the hood was being taken off my head again, and the Sony cop looked like he wanted to nail the other cop, but he didn't. The desk sergeant bent down and cut my straps, then helped me to my feet. "You're not going to give me any trouble, are you?" he said as he led me around to a nice ergo office chair. "No, sir. You just sit there, and I'll be with you in a moment." I sat down and rubbed my wrists and ankles. My left ankle was oozing blood from where it had been rubbed raw. I couldn't believe that the Sony family could inflict such indignities on my cute little person. I was so goddamn self-righteous, and I know I was smirking as the desk sergeant chewed out the Sony cop, taking down his badge number and so on, so that I'd have it. I thanked the cop profusely, and I kept on thanking him as he booked me and printed me and took my mug shots. I was joking and maybe even flirting a little. I was a cute 15-year-old, and I knew it. After the nastiness with the Sony cops, being processed into the criminal justice system seemed mild and inoffensive. It didn't really occur to me that I was being arrested until my good pal the cop asked me to turn out my pockets before putting me in the cell. "Wait," I said. "Sergeant Lorenzi, wait. You don't have to put me in a cell, do you, Sergeant Lorenzi? Sergeant Lorenzi, I don't need to go into a cell. Let me call my mom. She'll come down and drop the charges, and I can wait here. I'll help out. I can get coffee, Sergeant Lorenzi." For a second, it looked like he was going to go through with it. Then he relented, and I spent the next couple hours fetching and filing and even running out for coffee. That's how much he trusted me, while we waited for Mom to show up. I was actually feeling pretty good about it by the time she arrived. Of course, that didn't last long. She came through the door like Yosemite Sam, frothing at the chops and howling for my blood. She wanted to press charges, see me locked up to teach me a lesson. She didn't care how the Sony cops had gassed and trussed me. As far as she was concerned, I'd betrayed her and nothing was going to make it right. She kept on howling for the sergeant to give her the papers to sign. She wanted to swear out a complaint, and he just let her run out of steam, his face perfectly expressionless, until she was done. All right then, Mrs. Walchuk, all right. You swear at the complaint, and we'll hold her overnight into her bail hearing. We only got one holding cell, though, you understand. No juvenile facility. Rough crowd. A couple of Biowar enthusiasts in there right now. Caught him trying to thrax a bus terminal. A girl who killed her pimp and nailed his privates to the door of his hotel room before she took off. A couple of hard old drunks. No telling what else will come in today. We take away their knives and boots and purses, but these girls like to mess up fresh young things, scar them with the bars or their nails. We can't watch them all the time. He was leaning right across the desk at my mom, cold and still, and then he nudged my foot with his foot, and I knew that he was just yanking her chain. Is that what you want then, ma'am? Mom looked like she wanted to tell him yes, go ahead, call his bluff, but he was too good at it. She broke. No, it's not, she said. I'll take her home and deal with her there. That's fundamentally sound, he said. And Linda, you give me a call if you want to file a complaint against Sony. We have C-cam footage of the boardwalk and the station house if you need it, and I have that guy's badge ID, too. Mom looked alarmed, and I held up my raw, bruisey wrists to her. They gassed me before they took me in. Did you run? You never run from the cops, Linda. You should have known better. I didn't run. I put my arms in the air, and they gassed me and tied me up and took me in. That can't be, Linda. You must have done something. Mom was always ready to believe that I deserved whatever trouble I got into. She was the only one who didn't care how cute I was. No, Mom. I put my hands in the air. I surrendered. They got me anyways. They didn't care. It'll be on the tape. I'll get it from Sergeant Lorenzi when I file my complaint. You'll do no such thing. You stole a car, you endangered lives, and now you want to go sniveling to the authorities because Sony played a little rough when they brought you in? You committed a criminal act, Linda. You got treated like a criminal. I wanted to smack her. I knew that this was really about not embarrassing her in front of the Sony family, the nosy, chattery ladies with the other franchises that Mom competed against for woofie and bragging rights. But I'd learned something about drawing flies with honey that afternoon. The sergeant could have made things very hard on me, but by giving him a little sugar, I turned it into an almost fun afternoon. Mom took me home and screamed herself raw, and I played it all very contrite, then walked over to the mini-mall so that I could buy some saline solution for my eyes, which were still as red as stoplights. We never spoke of it again, and on my 16th birthday, Mom gave me the keys to a Vedic Series 8, and the first thing I did was download new firmware for the anti-theft transponder that killed it. 2 months later, it was stolen. I haven't driven a Sony since. Linda smiles and then purses her lips. Unrehearsed enough? Art shakes his head. Wow, what a story. Do you want to kiss me now, Linda says, conversationally. I believe I do, Art says, and he does. Linda pulls the back of his head to hers with one arm, and with the other, she half shrugs out of her robe. Art pulls his shirt up to his armpits, feels the scorching softness of her chest on his, and groans. His erection grinds into her mons through his jockey shorts, and he groans again as she sucks his tongue into her mouth and masticates it, just shy of hard enough to hurt. She breaks off and reaches down for the waistband of his jockeys, and his whole body arches in anticipation. Then his comm rings. Again. Fuck! Art says, just as Linda says, shit! And they both snort a laugh. Linda pulls his hand to her nipple again, and Art shivers, sighs, and reaches for his comm, which won't stop ringing. It's me, Fede says. Jesus, Fede, what is it? What is it? Art, you haven't been to the office for more than 4 hours in a week. It's going on noon and you still aren't here. Fede's voice is hard and unreasoning. Art feels his own temper rise in response. Where the hell did Fede get off anyway? So fucking what, Fede? I don't actually work for you, you know. I've been taking care of shit off-site. Oh sure, Art. If you get into trouble, I'll get into trouble, and you know exactly what I mean. I'm not in trouble, Fede. I'm taking the day off. Why don't you call me tomorrow? What the hell does that mean? You can't just take the day off. I wrote the goddamn procedure. You have to fill in the form and get it signed by your supervisor. It needs to be documented. Are you trying to undermine me? You are so goddamn paranoid, Federico. I got mugged last night, all right? I've been in a police station for the past 18 hours straight. I'm going to take a shower, and I'm going to take a nap, and I'm going to get a massage, and I'm not going into the office, and I'm not going to fill in any forms! This is not about you! Fede pauses for a moment, and Art senses him marshaling his bad temper for another salvo. I don't give a shit, Art. If you're not coming into the office, you tell me, you hear? The VP of HR is going berserk, and I know exactly what it's about. He is on to us, you hear me? Every day that you're away and I'm covering for your ass, he gets more and more certain. If you keep this shit up, we're both dead. Hey, fuck you, Fede. Art is surprised to hear the words coming out of his mouth, but once they're out, he decides to go with them.
You can indulge your paranoid fantasies to your heart's content, but don't drag me into them. I got mugged last night. I had a near-fatal car crash a week ago. If the VP of HR wants to find out why I haven't been in the office, he can send me an email and I'll tell him exactly what's going on, and if he doesn't like it, he can toss my fucking salad. But I don't report to you. If you want to have a discussion, you call me and act like a human goddamn being. Tomorrow. Goodbye, Fede.
Art rings the comm off and snarls at it, then switches it off, switches off the emergency override, and briefly considers it tossing it out the goddamn window onto the precious English paving stones below. Instead, he hurls it into the soft cushions of the sofa. He turns back to Linda and makes a conscious effort to wipe the snarl off his face. He ratchets a smile onto his lips.
Sorry, sorry. Last time, I swear.
He crawls over to her on all fours. She's pulled her robe tight around her, and he slides a finger under the collar and slides it aside and darts for a kiss at the hollow of her collarbone. She shies away and drops her cheek to her shoulder, shielding the affected area.
I'm not, she starts. The moment's passed, okay? Why don't we just cuddle, all right?